Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book study. My name is Diane B. I am a recovered compulsive eater from New York. Today is Tuesday, May 3rd, 2022. Today we are reading from the Big Book, and we are on page 1, paragraph 1, Bill's story. Today's readers are, for the 12 steps, Denise G., 12 traditions, Catherine N. Reader number 1 with the text is Dana P. Reader number 2, reading page 164, Vision for You, is Penny L.C. And reader number 3, our backup reader today, is Stephanie L. Newcomer greeter is Noel E., and announcements are Eileen M. And thank you, everyone, for your service. The reference numbers for yesterday morning, Monday, May 2nd, 10 a.m. Eastern Time, is 18,912. That's 18912. And to this morning's meeting, May 3rd, at 7 a.m. Eastern Time, is 18,915. That's 18915. OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. Excuse me. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. As OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. So I will now ask Denise G. to read the 12 steps.
Good morning, Diane. Thank you for your service. My name is Denise G., and I'm from Northern California. Here are the 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. 1, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives have become unmanageable. 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrong. 6, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
Thank you, Denise. Oh, thank you, Denise. And now I'm going to ask Catherine N. to read the 12 traditions.
Hi, yes. This is Catherine N., compulsive overeater, Richmond, Virginia. Here are the 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. 1, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4, each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5, Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6. An OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise. Lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA, as such, ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Catherine. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There's no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that our book be directly linked to what was read. The meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted. And in order to hear everyone clearly, please do not use the speaker function on your phone. Today, we resume our study of the Big Book. We're on page 1, paragraph 1, in Bill's story. And I will ask Dana P. to please get us started. Thank you, Dana.
Can you hear me, Diane?
Yes, thank you so much.
Good morning, and thank you so much for your service. My name is Dana P., and I reside in California. War fever ran high in the New England town to which we knew young officers from Plattsburgh were assigned, and we were flattered when the first citizens took us into their homes, making us feel heroic. Here was love, applause, war, moments sublime, and intervals hilarious. I was part of life at last. And in the midst of the excitement, I discovered liquor. I forgot the strong warnings and prejudices of my people concerning drink. In time, we sailed for over there. I was very lonely again and turned to alcohol. Wow. I just want to say, release me from the up to now, detach me from the after now, allow me to be fully present in the now. One of the things that I've learned, I would say the most important thing that I learned in this program and continue to learn on a moment-by-moment basis is to turn to a higher power, to ask for my direction and my guidance from a higher power. When I was told by my many in this program, but ultimately, initially, my sponsor, to look at this, you know, how do I drink like Bill and how do I act like Bill? Well, I added to that for myself, how do I relate to Bill? And then later on, there are four more stories of people and or fictitious people in this first 164 pages that were asked to see where we relate. And what I see in my relation, well, and actually, honestly, the first one and the only one I related to was the jaywalker because I was in for a thrill. So I would just say to you, if you're new, because really it's the newcomer that we're speaking to, it's most important. You are definitely the most important person here in this meeting today. And speaking to you, I read this paragraph and this word popped out here, lonely. And I would venture to guess, though he does not say that in this paragraph, but I would venture to guess despite this feeling of love, applause, moments sublime and intervals hilarious in this party that he was, I mean, it was a big party, right? They're getting ready to go to World War One, and everyone is excited. That he felt like he belonged to something bigger than himself, yet at the same time, I would venture to guess that he still felt alone. And he reached for that drink, and that's when he really felt like he was part of something. For me, the loneliness was a way of dealing with people, and continues to be. It's something that, you know, I have to continually turn over to my higher power, rather than over to the food, because if it was up to me, I would hide out in my loneliness and consume massive quantities of food and or engage in compulsive activities to avoid these types of situations and or to feel quote-unquote comfortable in these types of situations. So I'll tell you, I can relate to everything about Bill's story as it goes on. We'll be sharing some more about, you know, how he goes on and off the wagon, and I can relate to every single one of the stories as I work through this book more and more. So I'm so grateful to be starting again with Bill's story and staying right where we are right now here, even before step one with him. So thanks a lot for letting me share, and such a pleasure to be of service. I'll pass.
Thank you, Dana. Okay, so although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your share to every third day in order that others might share their experience too. So if you haven't shared since Thursday, if that was the last time you shared, then I would love to hear from you again. So would the rest of us. So I will now take people's names who wants to share. Star one,
Bruce,
unmute, please. Okay, I got Bruce and somebody else. Betsy. Somebody was between Beth and Betsy. I'm sorry, who?
Chaya P.
Chaya, okay.
Veronica B.
There was a man's voice in there.
Justin B.
Justin, thank you. Okay, and I think there was one more person. I have Bruce, Betsy, Chaya, Deb, Justin.
Veronica B.
Veronica, thank you so much. We've got a lot of B initials, I think. Okay, so Bruce, you can start. You'll be followed by Betsy. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Bruce E. in Florida. I'm recovered. And love the paragraph, love the chapter. Yeah, here I am. Let's see. Life's exciting, right? Life for Bill was real exciting. Young officer in the World War One. Going off to war, and man, love, applause, moments, flying intervals, hilarious. Here's the one. I was part of life at last. You know, how many times have I said that? Of course, I've said that I'm depressed, I'm sad, I'm upset, and then I found food. But he was part of life at last, and in the midst of excitement, he discovers liquor. So I was part of life at last, and in the midst of excitement, I discovered food. Food worked real good then, you know, when the excitement came. Man, the food was, it was really good then. But now what about later on here in the last paragraph? Then I was lonely, and again I turned to alcohol. So first, the excitement, he turns to liquor. Second, the loneliness, he turns to liquor. How about me? First, excitement, I turned to food. Then the depression, the loneliness, the being upset, the being angry, being fearful. And I'm in the food. You know, so I used food to treat any type of emotion or any type of situation that was going on in my life. Excitement, birthdays, weddings, whatever, or just loneliness, depression, being at home. Food, 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 food. Always treated it, you know. And the problem with it, where I got sucked into the whole thing, scenario here was that it worked at first. You know, man, the excitement, and I'm using food, And I'm getting more excited because I got something to really even prop me up even more with the excitement. That's where I got sucked into it. And then, hey, if it worked for that, maybe it'll work for the depression, the loneliness, sadness, and the difficulties. And I use food then. And it worked then at first. And then it worked and it worked and it worked until it quit working. And then when it quit working, it had me. I was hooked. I was addicted to it. So I was addicted to food, you know. So I'm still an addict. I'm still a food addict. I'm just recovered now. That's all. I've gotten on even playing field with food. I don't use food to treat excitement. I don't use food to treat loneliness. I don't use food to treat difficulties. I don't use food to treat tough times. I have a food plan that I use, whether I'm excited, whether I'm lonely. And I have to say my emotions are more in the middle than they used to be. They used to be way up here, way down here. I'm closer to the middle than I have been probably in a long time in my life or a big part of my life. So I'm not using food to treat whether I'm in the middle, whether I'm at the top and bottom. I'm not using food to treat stuff. I'm using food as a, you know, in my food plan, in a reasonable food plan. And when
gentle
it's time
reminder.
To eat, it's time to eat. Thank you. And I pass.
Thank you, Bruce. Next, we have Betsy followed by Haya. If you could give us the initial of your last name, that would be great. Thank you. Star one, Betsy.
My name is Betsy, and Betsy G. From Colorado. Thank you for your service. And I, as I heard it read today, I was thinking about how these sentences apply to me. I was part of life at last, and in the midst of excitement, I discovered liquor. What that brings to mind for me is being about 7 or 8 and being able to apply what I learned about reading, to read a cookbook, and then to do, you know, learn to cook. And I remember making cookies and cakes and all those kinds of things and getting love and applause. I come from a family of 8 kids, and so I got a lot of reinforcement for that behavior. And then the last sentence, which people have been talking about, I was very lonely and again turned to alcohol. What I thought about was when I was 4 years old, my brother, who was older than I, was, you know, burning things in an incinerator, and he burned himself. My mother gathered him in, and what she did was she gave him Oreos, and she gave him those to soothe his pain. And the message I got was, if you're in pain, sugar will help. And you know, and that became a mantra. When I felt loneliness, when I felt pain, to use sugar. You know, today, because of this program and working the steps, there's another solution for me, and that is to go to my higher power when I'm lonely, or go to my higher power when I'm excited. And so I'm grateful for that. I'm grateful to be able to identify with Bill, and with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Betsy. Haya, Haya. Sorry, I couldn't pass that one up. Haya, you're up. Star one to unmute, please.
Thanks, Kat. This is Haya. I'm a very grateful recovered compulsive overeater, bulimic, and restrictor. I live in Colorado. I'm currently in New Jersey, and I'm very, very grateful to be here this morning, and I want to welcome anyone who's new. This is a self-admission club. you're all welcome, and I hope you hear something today that'll help you, that'll make you want to come back. I could identify so much to the first person who was in the lineup. I believe that for me, I relate to this in a lot of ways. For me, I think the loneliness was, I just learned to turn to food from the get-go. I think, you know, they say genetics loaded the gun and life pulled the trigger. And for me, having a death of a parent when I was 6 months old created a lot of chaos in the home, and food was the fix. for everyone, and it was given to me, and then I learned to use it, and no blame here, it's just what happened. And I think for me, the loneliness preceded the using it for excitement. I think I used it to just feel better from whatever I was feeling. And then, you know, I used it as I got older for excitement, but it always brought me back to that loneliness and despair. And I'm just so grateful that I don't have to do that today, that I can turn to a power greater than myself, which I did not have a concept of when I got here. So there's hope for people who come as atheists or agnostics. I just had no, like, it just wasn't even on my radar. And, you know, I'm in New Jersey, just like life on life's terms. I'm in New Jersey for a month. My mom took a fall last week, and so that's been, I'm helping taking care of her, and then I'm also planning a wedding. My daughter got engaged. She's getting married July 3rd, and so there's a lot going on. I'm staying at my mom's at the moment, where there really is not room for me, and like there literally isn't a room. I'm sleeping in the living room on a blow-up bed, and the TV's really loud, and I've been like, the TV's loud, and it's like, you know what? I'm so grateful that this morning when I woke up kind of cranky, I could turn to God. I could do a 10 step. I sent, you know, to my little God squad, people that know what's going on in my life, and I don't have to turn to food. And I was able to look at my own part. I am here to be of service, period. If it's inconvenient, get earplugs, you know? And, so I'm just grateful that I, and also to give myself, you know, like, okay, it's hard. Yeah, it is. But I don't have to eat or stick my head in the toilet. I am so grateful. And that is not the way I was living before I found this incredible program, the 12 steps that are really the essence, to go from being powerless over food and a slave to food to having as a servant of this higher power. Thanks, Ben.
Thank you, Chaya. Next, we have Deb, followed by Justin B.
Hi, I was unmuting. I think you said my name. This is Deb, recovered compulsive overeater from Israel. And I also wanted to share on the line, I was part of Life at Last. It makes me think of one of my biggest bottoms, which amazingly was not the bottom that brought me to OA. I had two more bottoms after that, but I was fully in my ego, and my ego was completely running the show and just loving what I thought, what it convinced me was success, you know. And I realize now it was just my disease trying to get the best of me and thinking that I was part, you know, I was finally, I had arrived. And I was part of life, and I was living the way I thought I was supposed to. And I was the loneliest I've ever been, not because I was alone, but because I pushed everyone away that cared about me, and focused on the people who didn't care one bit about me. And it just, I was just thinking about, you know, that part, and I was thinking in contrast how now I also kind of think I'm part of Life at Last, but in a whole other way. I'm part of Life at Last because I live in the world of the spirit. I try to connect to my higher power every day, and live my life according to what my higher power wants for me. And so that's a different way of, for me to look at being a part of Life at Last. Like, I'm part of life that has meaning, part of life that have substance, and not at all in the way I looked at it back then. And that's all I had to share for today. Thank you. I pass.
Thank you, Deb. Justin B., followed by Veronica B.
Good morning. I'm Justin B. I am a compulsive overeater in Washington. I read this paragraph differently today than I ever have. And the phrases that jumped out at me were, here was love, applause, war, moment sublime, and intervals hilarious, followed by one that's been used a lot, I was part of life at last. And I relate that today because of an experience I had yesterday to my world in recovery. I was feeling accepted. I was feeling like I was part of life at last within the rooms of recovery, that, you know, applause and moments sublime. And then things, I had a difficult day yesterday. Things were, my routine was thrown way off because of situations of the previous few days. I was emotionally on edge. And I was sitting isolated in a car with, you know, my planned meal plan lunch sitting in the back seat, but it was only like 9:30 in the morning, and I was climbing up the walls, insane, needing something to eat, knowing I could just run to a drive-through and get something that tied me over until lunch, and knowing these things, and I reached out to people reached out to me, I had these conversations, but I never turned to my higher power, to my God during that time. I was relying on myself, on my own willpower, and relying on other people who, yes, are great to rely on, but their strength is not enough to get me through. Gratefully, while insane the entire day, and my poor daughter and family got to witness me in my addict mind, gratefully I came through abstinent. But man, what a difficult and learning experience. I hope to learn from it and turn to my higher power as well as others more today. But it's not for me. It's no longer just in active addiction. It's also in the rooms of recovery. I can feel, and that love, applause, moment sublime can help me feel like I was part of life at last and give me a sense of safety when I need to be on my toes. But grateful for these fellowships, for the help and connection that comes through these. And with that, I will pass today. Thanks. I'm Justin from Washington.
Thank you, Justin. Veronica B., star one to unmute, please.
Good morning. I'm Veronica. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater and a bulimic. And thank you for your service. What I was told when I started reading Bill's story with my sponsor was, I was asked to see if I related to how Bill, how he felt, how he thinks, and how he drank. And so what I relate to in this paragraph is where it says, I was lonely and again turned to alcohol. Well, that's why I ate. I ate because I was lonely. I felt like something was missing. I felt like I was apart from. It seemed like everybody else was having an easier time of living except me. So food took care of all that. And I would call like my binge foods like my lovers. Like they never let me down. And where it says, I was part of, you know, here was love, applause, and moments sublime. I was part of life at last. Even though he had love and applause and moments sublime, like he still turns to alcohol. You know, that's my experience too. You know, for me, it's like there's not enough love. There's not enough applause for me, you know, to fill me up. Like something is missing inside me. This is how I know that, you know, I need God. The only thing that's going to fill that hole that I have is the God of my understanding to make me feel safe and protected, because I suffer from the disease of not enough, you know, not enough of my binge food, not enough attention, not enough. And I didn't think I would be able to relate to Bill, but that's what I do. I just would pay attention to how he drank, how he thinks, and how he feels. And I'm just like Bill. I ate just like he drank. And this is how I know I'm a compulsive eater, you know, because I use food for an effect. And until I got desperate enough to come to you guys and want a different way of life. Today, I live on a spiritual basis. Today, I live on a basis of trusting and relying on God and not the food. God has removed my obsession with my food, my binge food. I have food neutrality today. I am comfortable in my own skin today, and that's only because of a God of my understanding being in the middle of you guys, staying connected to you guys, and help others, you know. So this is a beautiful way of life, and you too can have this if you just do the work. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Veronica. In order to have, although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your share to every third day in order that others might share their experience too. So I will now take more names. Please give me your first name, last initial, and your state. Star one to unmute.
Fran V.
Patty M.
Fran, Patty.
Christina R. from Florida.
Christina R.
Patricia H. from North Carolina.
Patricia H. Anybody else? We have probably room for one or two more. Okay. So let's start with Fran, please, and followed by Patty.
Hi, my name is Fran V. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in New Jersey, by God's grace and mercy. And I ate the way Bill drank. And, you know, I could be lonely in a room full of people, and I could not feel lonely by being alone by myself. I just didn't need a reason. I would eat with the highs. I would eat with the lows. I would eat at funerals, birthdays, weddings, or just by myself. Didn't need a special occasion. Didn't need a special day. And when that addiction was running rampant, I would get in the car in a snowstorm for a bag of something. But by God's grace and mercy, I am no true with food. I'm working these steps to the best of my ability, since we are not saints, that's for sure. But I do have a merciful, kind, forgiving God, and that's the way I want to treat other people, the way my higher power has been so merciful for me. So this is a transformation, not only on the outside, but on the inside. You know, the weight gain and the clothes getting tighter, that stinks. But so does the stinking thinking. So does the depression, the isolation, the change of attitude, and all those things that go with the disease, the spiritual malady. It's not just the physical. So God has removed the obsession and has given me the ability to maintain this God-given recovery. Thank you so much for letting me
Thanks,
share.
Thanks, Fran. Oh, thank you, Fran. And now Patty, followed by Christine.
Hi, this is Patty M. I'm calling from Florida. Abstinent today, and I'm happy to hear everyone online today. I love these meetings. They really help me in the morning to get my head straight to go through the day. And the food is becoming neutral, and so that is a wonderful thing. And this program really works, and that's all I wanted to say. Thank you. Bye.
Thanks, Patty. Short and sweet. Christine R., followed by Patricia H. Star one to unmute, Christine.
Hi, good morning. Christina R. from Florida, grateful, recovering, compulsive eater. And I really felt led to share today, and this paragraph is just bringing me back, all the way back to a little girl and just remembering specific memories of when I felt that effect from certain foods. And I look back and it was always specific ingredients and specific foods that are now no longer on my food list. And I can just remember being that little girl, and loneliness was definitely in there, like he's talking about, and sitting by myself and just taking a bite of something and feeling like everything felt better. And I grew up in it was a very unstable home and just a lot of fear. And so I just remember certain foods would make me feel better, and I would hide and go get them, you know, when I wasn't supposed to, or I would want to take my siblings' foods. It was just always this abnormal behavior, but I really didn't know what was wrong with me for a really long time, and I actually blamed my parents for my upbringing, for the compulsive eating, until I really learned, you know, God really showed me that that wasn't true, that it wasn't their fault, that I did have this condition in my body and in my mind. And I could also relate to the just the excitement in turning to food. And one memory that really stood out that I felt like I need to remind myself of is, even in recovery, being abstinent and having excitement, and I felt like he said there, like I arrived in parts of abstinence where I was at goal weight and I was getting the attention I wanted and I felt accepted and validated. And so I would then even, you know, like, because I was seeking this attention and even struggled with some defects of and being involved in one of those vicarious thrills that the Big Book talks about, that is an impediment to our recovery, I didn't want to let that go. And eventually I would go back to the food, even though the food wasn't the first trigger. It was that I was, it was the excitement. It was just being a part of, it was that thrill. And so all of this is just so important for me to remember, that it doesn't matter, you know, if I'm lonely, if I'm excited, if I'm scared, you know, like there, you know, every emotion can be an excuse or a trigger for me to want to eat. And I have no defense against that first bite. And I have to, you know, trudge every day and stay connected to God. And I'm just so grateful for freedom today. So thank you so much for letting me share. And I'll pass.
Thanks, Christina. Patricia H. Star one to unmute, please.
Good morning. Excuse me. This is Patricia H. from North Carolina. As I'm listening to all the other shares, it's just brought so much clarity to me about this paragraph, because I've read this paragraph a few times before and I felt like it didn't relate to me. But this morning, as I'm reading and as I'm listening, I'm like, you know what? I was just like Bill in this story. Years ago as a child, I discovered all the food that brought me comfort. And even now, sometimes I can so easily forget the warnings, like he forgot the warnings of the alcohol, the way his people had talked about it and the prejudice against it. And I can so easily forget the pain that the comfort foods bring me. I can forget all the illnesses that it can cause, and even the stomach problems that it can cause me to have so easily. But I'm so grateful that with this program, I'm learning to use the principles that set forth in these 12 steps. Yesterday afternoon, for instance, I had a blinding migraine headache all of a sudden. And I had had my dinner, but I was still wanting to eat something else. I was looking for that comfort to bring me, to take that pain away. And I even thought about all the different foods that I used to eat that could bring me that feeling that I was looking for. And thank God I didn't have it in my house. And thank God I recognized that this was not about me being hungry, but it was about me trying to suppress an emotion. So I really thought about the emotions I was going through. And I just sat and talked to God about it, because I realized, I said, you know, I could call another fellow, but let me first talk to God. So I just talked to him about how I was feeling, how I felt so miserable with the headache, and how I wanted to feel better, and how the food always brought me this feeling. I said, but God, it always brings pain afterward, but you can bring me that comfort, and you can ease this pain, whether it's through an instant miracle or by me taking medication. And I won't have any side effects from the comfort that you bring me. And I just give this problem I'm having to you right now. And I'm just asking and inviting you here to give me that comfort and that peace that I'm yearning. And I just, eventually, I fell asleep because I woke up this morning. I'm still feeling kind of foggy from the headache. But thank God I'm abstinent by the grace of God. And I'm so grateful this program and all that I'm learning in this big book. I think this is one of the best studies I have ever stumbled upon. So I thank you all for your service, and thank you for allowing me to share with that I pass.
Thank you, Patricia. We have room for one more. Who would like to take that last spot? Star one to unmute.
This is one Kirby. Can I please speak?
Great. What was your name, please?
Kirby with a K.
K-I-R-B-Y?
Yep. Hi.
Okay. And your last initial?
C.
Thank you. Okay, Kirby C, you have the last position today.
Yeah, thank you for that.
I'm sorry, that's all we have time for. Okay, who was the other person?
Do I have time?
I'm sorry. Yeah, somebody came in after Kirby. What was your name, please?
Teresa W.
Thank you, Teresa. Okay, let's do Kirby, please. Kirby C.
Hi, good morning, everybody. I'm Kirby. I'm a compulsive overeater. Really grateful that this meeting exists. I just am in a position where I'm powerless, and I'm just trying to stay out of my head. I almost picked up last week for the first time in 3 years, so that's how I know it's. I'm really trying to control the situation and just trying to feel better. I just want to feel better. And sometimes when we're not using, or when I'm not using my vices, things are going to be uncomfortable. And so I'm just having to sit and really trying to lean on higher power. And I guess I'm still just wanting to control things because it's been hard to just, keep surrendering. And I have to trust that there's a huge lesson here. And, in the meantime, I'm just really leaning on program and fellows and trying to stay out of my head. And I guess I just need to keep sharing about that too. And, just working all the tools and being in action. Hope everybody has a good day. I pass. Thanks.
Thank you. Let's see. Sorry, that was Kirby. Thank you. Now we have Teresa W.
Hi, this is Teresa W. from Colorado, and I am a recovering compulsive overeater, and I am very excited to share today. I just want to say that when I started this program, I didn't know if anything could help me with my cravings, and this program has worked miracles in my life, and I'm so thankful for that, and I recommend working with a sponsor, and not every sponsor works out for whatever reason, so if you don't have a sponsor, I really recommend getting one. And if that doesn't work out, keep looking and find a sponsor. And not only has it positively affected myself, but my young kids are making much healthier food choices, which is really, really a sign of how well worth it is on the impact on my family and my friends. And I hope you have a blessed day. Yes.
Thanks, Teresa. Wow, we still have time for more people because we had such nice, concise speakers. So I can take one more person.
Jennifer from Atlanta.
Okay, Jennifer, what was your last initial?
Jenna B. from Atlanta.
B. Okay, and there was one other person that maybe if we have time you could go. Who was after Jennifer? Or Jenna, rather,
Chrissy O. Indiana.
Okay, Chrissy, if we have time, you're up. But right now we have Jennifer B. Thank you.
Hi, Jenna Griffel, recovering overeater. For me, this meeting has been really helpful. I really appreciate starting my day this way. Right now there's some changes at work, and my mind always goes to, I'm going to lose my job, and I think that's part of what can cause me to eat is, that catastrophizing and going to, the worst-case scenario. But I'm really grateful to the program because I can talk it out with people, and I realize most of the time it's not the worst case scenario, and also wait it out because, like, I don't need to, like, panic unless something actually happens. And even if it does happen, it's not life and death, and I can look for another job, and there's just options now that I have program, and I'm going to commit to a day of abstinence no matter what happens. Thanks for all of y'all shares.
Thank you, Jenna. Thank you. Chrissy O, we actually have time for you. Star one to unmute. Chrissy, star one to unmute, please.
Thank you. This is Chrissy O in Indiana. A lot in that paragraph, and what really drew my attention was that word lonely. I remember, you know, being in, as a young woman living in the basement of my, you know, young husband's parents' home, and being so miserable that, you know, I didn't have my own home, and here we are living in their basement, and I was in so much self-pity, and, you know, there was a house full of people. You know, there were 5, 6, 7, 8 people in the home, one bathroom, you know, we saw everybody all the time, ate meals together, but I was so lonely. I was, like, isolated in my mind and really in self-pity, always in self-pity, feeling sorry for myself, not being able to find a way out, you know, just laying around all the time and eating and in my head, and never ever did it dawn on me to be of any service to anyone else. I mean, occasionally I'd vacuum or do something, but, you know, my mother-in-law did all the cooking and I just figured she wanted to do it. I never even offered. Well, maybe I did a time or two, but then I just, you know, figured in my head nobody liked what I cook. Everything was like doom and gloom. And, you know, in the eating, being so, so just into myself, and the loneliness turned into almost like I was like, put myself up on a pedestal and idolized myself. And I was the only one I could ever think about. And, you know, I thought I was lonely. Oops, excuse me. But then food was my friend. Food is what made me feel like I was no longer lonely. It oftentimes would, you know, give me those feelings of hilarious and, you know, on cloud nine, you know, but then I'd crash and it would be over. And so that's all I have. And I'm new to this meeting and just wanted to make sure I got a chance to jump in and say hello again. Chrissy O in Indiana. Thank you, and I'll pass.
Thank you, Chrissy. Thank you, everyone who shared today and who did service today. We will now close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Will Penny L.C., please read A Vision for You. Our book is meant to be suggestive only.
Yes, thank you, Diane. This is Penny L.C., a grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater from the state of Washington. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you.